Hamish Jameson. I'm sitting in my office at Freighter Travel in sunny Napier on the east coast of the North Isle of New Zealand.
And we were talking yesterday, and you told us that way back when you got your start in sea travel as a purser. So tell us, first of all, what is a purser?
The purser runs the money side of the ship. The purser's main responsibilities are arranging the food, the catering, the staffing, and the shore excursions from the passenger point of view. So the purser is the hotel manager. He or she keeps an eye on everything and makes it all work. I joined P&O back in 1966, when I literally ran away to sea. When I came ashore in the mid-70s, it didn't take me long to realise the sea was still in my blood. So we had to find something else to do to get us back to sea.
And if we fast forward to 2009, you're now a bit of an expert in the cargo ship business.
I don't like to use the word expert, because X is once was and spurt is drip under pressure. But I like to think I know a little bit about the subject. And I try and do my best to share that to a lot of other people who've never been to sea before.
So tell us why you would want to spend, for example, 2 or 3 weeks on a cargo ship, going across the ocean, which can be quite rough, possibly seasick, tucked up in a little cabin, when you could get on a perfectly good airplane and be there in 12 hours.
I think if you have to ask that question, you've never done it. There are a lot of people who can't fly, as in some sort of phobia. There are those who won't fly for medical reasons. I had a gentleman this morning on the phone. He has a damaged retina. He's having an operation in Auckland tomorrow, and he wants to go home to Australia. Because they're operating on his eyes, he can't fly for 8 weeks. So he needs to get home. His farm has been damaged with a fire, so he needs to go home as soon as possible. But I think the major thing is, when you're sitting up the front of the bow of the ship on your own, and all you see is the sea going past, and you hear the wind and the waves, you're in heaven. And for me, an afternoon with a thermos of Chardonnay sitting right on the bow, watching the world go by with my binoculars, that's heaven, and that's my blob out. And a lot of people who've done it once are back ever and ever and ever again.
How many trips have you done on a cargo ship?
I've done nine voyages. The longest has been 2 weeks, mainly because I'm self-employed. I can't take too long away. So I've had to, by very nature, had to have shorter voyages. My favourite voyage, I think, would have been on a French ship called the Matisse, where the captain was French. And I love the French for their systems, that if the captain is French, he must have his own cuisinier. So the food is much better than you normally expect on a freighter, all done with French style and panache. The cabins were nice, we were well looked after. And of course, on a freighter, you have the run of the ship. You don't have to stay out of the way. You can become as involved as you want, or you don't have to be involved at all. And being able to go up onto the bridge at 4 o'clock in the morning, make yourself a cup of coffee, and watch the sun come up is another part of my day. That's what gets me back to sea. The ports for me are relatively irrelevant, and for many of my passengers, the ports are irrelevant. They just want to be at sea.
Can you give us an idea of what a typical day might be on a cargo ship and what there would be to do? Because it's not like a cruise ship. There isn't someone coming around
to
fetch you to play bingo in the evening or go dancing.
I always tell first-time freighter passengers, if you're not comfortable in your own environment, don't go to sea on a freighter. Most of the day, you can spend doing whatever you want. For my recommendation, I like to be up before dawn, and I'm on the bridge at dawn watching the sun come up. And then you go down and have breakfast and get changed, and then in the morning you can read a book, you can go for walks around the ship. Remember that it's nowhere in the ship you can't go, so you can walk around the decks 3 or 4 times. I've watched people do this day in, day out for weeks. Then it's lunchtime, obviously, and maybe something before lunch to drink. After lunch, well, of course, you were up early, so you need a nap. And the nap will take you through to 3:30 or even 4 o'clock, and, well, then it's time for a drink, isn't it? Or a video, or a DVD, or, like me, I like to take about an hour and a half and go up to the bow and sit up there and watch the world go by. In the evening, I tend to read a book or watch a DVD, or quite often we play cards with the other passengers. Or if you're lucky and the crew like you, you'll get invited down to the crew mess, where you'll have karaoke nights, God forbid. Or other exciting activities such as gambling and that sort of thing.
it seemed to me that on our short voyage that we did, just 5 days, that a lot of the environment on the ship would depend on the captain. We had an excellent captain, and we really felt that he set the tone. Is that correct?
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. I've been on one ship where we had a chap called Captain Fantastic, and that was our nickname for him. And he's become so popular that we now have people asking what ship he's on, and they book on that particular ship. And otherwise, also I've had Captain Bligh as well. He should never have been on a ship carrying passengers. So if the captain is not as communicative as he could be, you get in touch and you get together with the second and third and first officers, and they'll make your voyage pleasant as well. There's always someone on the ship who's nice, and it's very, very rare. In nearly 20 years, I've only had one bad captain.
Do you usually get other passengers, or is there a risk that you would be alone? Well, there's always a risk, but what are the chances?
The chances of being the only passenger on board now would be less than 5%. Freighter cruising has become so popular since 9/11 that it's almost impossible that you'll be on your own.
And when we look at the sort of practicalities of it, how do people go about finding which routes are out there, and how far ahead should they book?
That's always a tricky one, because I tell my people, tell me what you want, and I'll see if I can find it. Currently, I have about 600 ships available around the world, but a lot of them are on the same routes at the same time. It's difficult. If you want to go from A to B, we'll find you one. But one of our more popular routes from Australia or New Zealand to South America, there are no passenger-carrying freighters. There's nothing from South Africa to Australia. We waste a lot of time, or invest a lot of time, trying to find a ship to get someone there. We can get you anywhere in the world to any of the world in the world, but it may take two or even three ships to do it. So our best request is, tell us what you want and we'll find it for you, and we'll give you options.
So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that if you want it to go, for example, from Australia to Chile, you might not be able to do it directly, but you might send someone up to
correct.
San Francisco and then down.
We would send them from Australia to Cartagena in Colombia. From Cartagena in Colombia, we'd send it to Rio de Janeiro. And then the Maruba Africa from Rio down round the Straits of Magellan and up to Chile.
Gee, that sounds tempting.
That's a lovely voyage.
I'm just about ready to tell you to book it.
A lot of people want to go around Cape Horn. For sailors, it's the ultimate. Well, we can do that too now. We have three ships to go around Cape Horn once a fortnight.
If you had to pick just one classic journey, which one?
For me, the ultimate voyage is the Bank Line voyage from Auckland, here in New Zealand, to Singapore. It takes 40 to 45 days to sail what you can fly in just under 12 hours. But it visits nearly every island in the Pacific on the way, and it stops for 2 or 3 days. The second voyage, or second choice for me, would be from Singapore through to Houston in Texas. It goes up through Thailand, Vietnam, half a dozen ports in China, then into Japan, then straight across the Pacific and through the Panama Canal. Those two would be my ultimate voyages, but I also want to do Grimaldi. I also want to do a Hurtigruten up the coast of Finland. How many more do you need? I'm going to be busy for the next 30 years.
It sounds like you won't be short of things to do in your retirement anyway.
No, I don't think so.
I want to come back to some of the more practical aspects as well. Is it very common to get seasick?
Very uncommon. It's somewhat like a pendulum. If you imagine a pendulum swinging, the cruise ships you go on, they're very high out of the water. And a cruise ship will sway from left to right and from right to left, whilst the ship itself will rise and fall with the waves. So it's the left and right motion combined with the up and down motion as the ship goes over the waves, somewhat like a roller coaster.
So this is the pitching. The pitching is going forward, right?
And the yawing is going to the side. And both of them together is called screwing. That's what makes people seasick. Freighters sit a lot heavier in the water. They sit a lot lower in the water. So the whole principle is a cruise ship sits high out of the water, it wobbles much easier. A freighter sits lower in the water, it's much harder to wobble. So cases of seasickness in freighters is a lot less. But having said that, it does happen.
And what about pirates? We hear a lot about pirates recently off Somalia.
It's actually a very good question. And if you look at all of the activities of the pirates, what they're generally catching is low and slow. So oil tankers, very low in the water, it's easy to climb up the side. Or slow ships travelling less than 17 knots. Most of the container ships that we book people on are high and fast. By fast, we mean in excess of 24, 25 knots, which is nearly 60 kilometres an hour. It's pretty hard to catch.
But if you're a pirate in a speedboat, isn't it? Just a matter of...
Yeah, but how fast does the speedboat go? About 25 knots. So if you're travelling at the same speed as the ship, you're not going to catch it. But if you're not, you are travelling faster. You're only travelling 1 or 2 miles an hour faster. So it's going to take you an hour or an hour and a half to catch that ship. What is the captain doing on the bridge while he's being caught by the pirates? What action is he taking to ameliorate that risk? And in many cases, and I use the tanker, the big tanker as an example, it took the tug that captured that ship, took the tug 2 hours to catch the ship. What were the crew doing for that 2 hours while he was appearing on the radar on the bridge? So you have to wonder.
So you wouldn't dissuade people then from taking routes that go down the coast of Africa?
Definitely not. No. In fact, we have routes going through that area at least once a week, and I have no qualms whatsoever. I would do it myself. And as an adjunct to that, people also ask me, is it safe for a single woman to go on board a cargo ship? What's it like? My answer to that is, I'd be quite happy if my wife and or my daughters travelled alone on a freighter.
It's funny you mention that, and I suppose as an interviewer I shouldn't really tell a story, but I will anyway. We were on our passage with a 72-year-old French lady, and she brought up just that point. She said all her friends were horrified that as a 72-year-old woman she was going on this cruise alone. And she had the best time. They really took care of her.
Correct.
And it was her birthday during the course of the passage. And the chief engineer, who always had a little bit of a twinkle in his eye, and you could tell he was a bit of an intelligent fellow, he had looked up a quote from Victor Hugo about sailing on the sea, and he had written it nicely on a card and presented it to her with a few flowers at breakfast on the morning of her birthday, and it brought her to tears.
Yeah.
So you couldn't say that she wasn't well looked after on that ship.
That's right. And I think it's important to remember that the crew of the ship are usually together for quite a while. They become, in a sense, a surrogate family to each other. And someone in the crew tends to be mother, and someone in the crew tends to be father, and so on. So when you actually go on board a ship, it will take you 3 or 4 or 5 days to become part of that family. But once you become part of that family, you will make friends for the rest of your life.
There must be questions that people ask you all the time about freighter travel that you would like to share.
The most regular questions we get is, what's the weather like? And what happens in a cyclone? And all I can say to people is, the captain and the chief officer on the bridge will not knowingly steer into a cyclone. They get the weather forecast the same as you and I every day, and they tend to go around it, because losing containers over the side is not good for the shipping company. So the weather is generally relatively good. However, the most important thing to bear in mind when you're going on a freighter is that freight comes first. You're definitely a second-class citizen, and I know that sounds terrible, but it's true. So you must be flexible. And I always tell every one of my passengers, when you go to sea, there are two things you must pack: a sense of humour and a sense of patience.
I think that applies to even before you board the ship. I know
Indeed.
We called before we actually were able to get on board, and I think that ship changed departure times every 5 minutes.
That's correct. And that's what people don't understand, is that the minute the ship arrives in port, the captain is no longer in charge. The port agent is in charge. The captain's just the bus driver. And whilst he needs to know where everything's going and which container's going where and so on, he has no legal responsibility for the ship while it's in port. So it's the port agent who tells him what he can and cannot do.
And let's talk about cost just for a moment as well, because it is significantly more expensive in most cases than taking
yes.
a flight.
The cost is 100 euros per person per day on average. Now that accounts for all the port fees and deviation insurances and so on. Now that's actually, if you're a European, that's not bad. In days gone by, 100 euros was $100. Well, $100 a day for 3 meals, your accommodation and transportation from A to B is very reasonable. The problem we have now is that the euro has climbed up in value against the US and the Canadian and the Australian and the New Zealand dollar. So it's become somewhat expensive. And I have to admit that even last week I booked someone on the Queen Mary from New York to London rather than a cargo ship, because the Queen Mary was cheaper. However, the Queen Mary is not a cargo ship, and the passenger has to pack the necessary extra clothes to travel on the Queen Mary. So most of my passengers, I would say 70% of them, don't really care what it costs. They just want to go to sea, and they don't want the fluffery of a cruise liner. They're quite happy to have dinner and lunch and breakfast with the captain every day, because the captain will be in shorts and jeans.
We did notice, actually. The only time we didn't see him in shorts was when the harbour pilot came out.
Correct. He gets dressed.
Guide him in, and all of a sudden the captain appeared in his uniform with his pressed white shirt, and we barely recognised him. Thought, who is this man?
That's because once you're at sea, who cares? Be comfortable, be happy. And that's another thing that a lot of people do comment about on a freighter is it's a relaxed atmosphere. They take safety seriously. They take their cargo seriously. But life on board is quite relaxed.
Thank you very much for
taking
the time.
Very welcome.